Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
You set up the mics in the studio and you pretend you're at the beach and you're just hanging out, talking, and someone will start a song organically and then they'll join in. There was no like second take and there was no like one, two, right. three. It was just like it all happened organically.
Hey everybody, this is Patrick Foster here, and on behalf of Jim Lanahan, I want to welcome you to this episode of Rockin' the Suburbs. We are in the middle of the Rye Cooter experience, coming near the end, but there's still quite a bit of the story to tell, and we're going to do that today and over a couple days next week. And I hope you've been enjoying it. If you haven't listened to any of the series, go back and listen to it. If you're listening to this episode when it is released, that is May 8th, so you will have plenty of time over your weekend if you so desire, if you get a long drive coming up to catch up on the whole Rye Cooter experience. In yesterday's episode, we discussed some of the wonderful soundtrack music that Rye made during the 1980s, and just incredible vision and aptitude for scoring film. And, of course, as Kurt so eloquently said, what he did with Paris, Texas was just immense. Today, we're going to move on and talk about some of his collaborations, and we're going to take you right up to the point where a big musical event happens in Rye's career, but we're not going to get there till next week, so you got to hang on and listen to all the interesting collaboration music he made. Once again, big thanks to Kurt Gallagher for all his contributions to the series. Without him, etc., etc. Now, I won't ramble any longer. I have got the TDKs threaded up. Everything is synced and queued and ready to go. So let's jump in to Rye Cooter and his collaborations. Kurt, you've put together, and I'll let you kind of run us through this, but you've put together a really wonderful section here in our notes about the collaborations that Rye Cooter did throughout his career, starting in the early 70s and going all the way up through 2010. And I've read something that I think might be good to kick us off here, and then I'll let you guide us. Rye Cooter described some of the collaborations as a window that briefly opened in time that he went through and tried to make the most of while he was there. And if he had tried to do it again, sort of implying it would be closed maybe a year later or at another point. So he tried, at least in this quote, he was saying he tried to recognize these opportunities and take them while they were there and make the most of them, which is pretty amazing. Number one, that he was in a position to do that, and number two, that he could recognize it and be able to take advantage of it the way he did. So yeah, it's just, I mean, this is a tapestry of music here that on this list. So take us through some of the collaborations that you see as important and impactful.
Well, we talked about Jammin' with Edward, which was Nicky Hopkins, Mick Jagger, Bill Wyman, Charlie Watts, and Rye in 1972, just having an impromptu jam, and the mics happened to be turned on, and they edited it into an album. That was his first big collab. That was from 1972.
Thank you.
And about 3 years later, he reached out to Gabby Pahanui, which was a Hawaiian guitar player, and they agreed to do some recordings together, and he said he would just go to Hawaii and sit on the beach with Gabby Pahanui, and they would just share songs and kick songs around. And he was already, you know, we talked about him getting into island stuff, the Bahamas and Trinidad.
Right.
And it will become so much more important in a couple of years. But he would just go and listen and hang out with these people. And he said, you can't really capture what it's like to sit on the sand and learn and share songs with somebody. So that was a big experience for him. And he said that when they went to the studio, there was no like, okay, we're going to do this song and I'll count it off. And then we'll do like a couple takes till we get a good one. There was none of that in Hawaii. You set up the mics in the studio and you pretend you're at the beach and you're just hanging out, talking, and someone will start a song organically and then they'll join in. There was no like second take and there was no like one, two, right. three. It was just like it all happened organically. So he made a really important album with Gabby Hanui in 1975. And then there were some other tracks that were released in 1977. Did an album with Eric Clapton called Money and Cigarettes. Eric Clapton was getting off drugs and all he could enjoy anymore was, I guess he stopped drinking too, and all he could enjoy were money and cigarettes. And and he needed Rye to sort of prop him up on that album. I think he was having some tough times. And if you listen to the first couple tracks, Everyone Ought to Make a Change, it's really good. I'm not a big Eric Clapton guy, but that sounds really good. When he and Rye, I think Rye gave him a new lease on life in the early 80s when he really needed a kick.
Well, changing the weather, changing the sea, come back. Sometimes I change suits, I change shirts, I change baby just to get shed of the dirt. Everybody, we ought to change sometime. Yes, because sooner or later we're going out in that lonesome ground. Well, I change honey, I change money, I change people just to keep from being funny. Everybody,
Carla Olson in the Textones was an LA band, and he did some collabs with them, and they did a Dylan song called Clean Cut Kid with Carla Olson and the Textones. And she was just a friend from LA that he'd known for a long time. And the next collab, another highlight, one of the big highlights in Rye's career. I think this is one of the best things he ever did, which was just playing guitar on John Hiatt's album, Bring the Family. That is such a great record. John Hiatt, his wife committed suicide, and he quit drinking, and he was really down. He was having a really tough year, and he just picked himself up off the couch, and he just went out on the tour. He had written a bunch of songs to try to get through that experience, and he was at McCabe's playing these new songs, just as a solo, just a guy with a guitar.
Wow.
And the sound man from McCabe's heard these songs, and he said, you know what, we gotta make an album with these songs, and I'll produce it.
Wow.
And so the sound man from McCabe's became a record producer, and they reached out to Rye to play on it, and then they reached out to Jim Keltner, and then they reached out to Nick Lowe.
Wow.
And Nick Lowe had to, like, they called him at 11 o'clock in the morning, and he had to leave that evening. He had to leave at like 4 o'clock to go to the airport, and he couldn't even bring his bass. He had to rent a bass when he got to LA. No time
to
practice.
That's crazy.
He hadn't been playing bass since the Rock Pile broke up. He'd been playing mostly guitar for like four or five years. And he's like, I'm not sure you want me. I'm not really up on my bass licks. And he's like, no, we want you. And I said in the chat, I think they were looking for more of a vibe than a great bass player. Bill Mulligan said, really? You know, they went that far out just to get him based on his bass skills? But I think they were just looking for a vibe. Jim Keltner, you know, Rye Cooter, Nick Lowe, and John Hiatt in the studio. How can you beat that?
When the radio was playing, that old summer heat was on the rise. I just had to get away for some sad old song. Brought more tears to my eyes. And Lord, I couldn't tell her that her love was only killing me. Or by the dawning of the day, all her sweet dreams would fade to a lipstick sunset. Darkness
We can dream about the cool twilight, the dawn of the day, and I'll make my gift.
But that is such a great record, and Rye's guitar is so good through that whole album. Just the regular guitar and the slide guitar. Whew. What do you like that album?
I do. I like that album a lot. I find it to be very great. And it is one I actually came to through this community. I hadn't listened to it and was someone on here or through discussion via this podcast that I was pointed to it. And
such a great album. And they got together a few years later and did another album that didn't go so well. But I think they caught John Hiatt at the perfect time. His emotions were raw and the songs he had written were raw. And he just needed to get this out of his system and get past this stage of his life. And it's just beautiful what they captured. So kudos to the sound man from McCabe's Guitar Shop.
This collaboration with Bobby King and Terry Evans. So were they the singers that that he worked with as background singers?
Yep. Bobby King and Terry Evans were always there with Ryan on his albums from Paradise and Lunch forward, and they were always around. And then Bobby King and Terry Evans wanted to do an album of duets, and Rye produced it, their first album, and it's called Live and Let Live.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it's Live and Let Live. No, Live and Let Live from 1988. So Rye produced it, and he plays slide on most of the songs too, and it's just so freaking good. It's one of the best things that I found doing this research.
I've never heard it. Yeah, I have never heard it, and I'm looking forward to it.
So good. And then after that, Little Village made another album, but they had a lot of money, and they had too much time in the studio, and John Hiatt was not in the best shape again when they did this album. They did a tour, too, that was no fun for anybody. I guess John Hyatt doesn't like to fly, so he drives everywhere. They were traveling separately and staying in separate accommodations. And Ryan and Jim Keltner were just getting really sick of touring by then, so the tour didn't turn out very well. And the album didn't really take off. I think they had too much time to be perfectionists in the studio. Like, Bring the Family was made really quick, in like 1 week, I think.
Yeah.
But they had months to work on the Little Village album, and it just it didn't have that excitement to it, so it never really took off. Mm-hmm. And then he started working with some other people from far off lands. He did a meeting by the river with an Indian guitar player, Vishwa Mohan Bhatt. And that one's, I think, won a Grammy Award.
It's good. It's very good. And Bott is a plays a modified, I don't know, to me it looks like a slide guitar, man. It's I think it's called the Mohan Veena, but it, to me it wow. looks like a slide guitar. I mean, he sits down, you know, preschool style with the guitar across his lap and plays it that way, although he is trained as a classical musician. But man, when him and Rye get together, I really find that to be cool. I really, really do. Yeah. I don't know if I would call it, you know, strictly within the boundaries of Indian classical music, but since Rye's there, you know, it gets something else amended to it. But that's a really interesting album. I really like that one to listen to. It's great nice. For when you're working or writing or concentrating. It's wonderful music that stimulates your brain if you have it on in the background.
Beautiful. And the next one was Talking Timbuktu. That's another one you like a lot, right?
I like that one a lot, too. Ali Farkhar Touré is a great guitar player, and Talking Timbuktu, it's amazing. I mean, not only is Rye like a musical chameleon, but he doesn't do a musical chameleon for the sake of being a musical chameleon. You know, it's like what he was talking about. There's so much about that kind of African guitar style that makes a lot of sense, and you know, obviously influenced blues and vice versa, and it just feels like somewhere he would be, you know, and it really kind of fits together. Like I would have loved to have heard Rye play with some of those desert, you know, blues bands, those turmeric bands as well. But he's right in the pocket on this record too. They're both wonderful listens. I really like them both a lot.
Awesome. He did a couple albums with the Chieftains. We talked about one. There was another one called Dunmore Lassie. Oh, no. The Long Black Veil was another album that he appears on a bunch of tracks on Long Black Veil with the Chieftains. That's from 95. He appeared on a fundraiser, a post-Katrina fundraiser, and he did a song with Buckwheat Zydeco called Let's Work Together.
That's awesome. I've never heard that.
To raise money. Yeah, it's good. It's good. To raise money for New Orleans post-Katrina.
We're together with the body with fall. Come on, people, let's get on the ball. Work together. Together we will stand, every boy, girl, woman, and a man. We'll make someone happy and make someone smile. Let's work together, make life worthwhile.
Let's work together.
Come on, come on,
let's work together.
Find our people.
All together we will stand, every boy, girl, woman, and a man.
We heard Buckwheat Zydeco right there from the year 1997 with a single that Rye played on called Let's Work Together. A whole bunch of wonderful collaborations, lots of different styles, lots of different moods, and all kinds of things Rye has done over his career, just fitting in with the incredible musical glue that he is to hold so many amazing projects together. We're going to go out today with a song that was mentioned earlier in the episode, but we didn't play it at that time. And it's a song by some singers that Rye worked with for a long time, Bobby King and Terry Evans, and their album Live and Let Live from the year 1988. The song we'll hear is called Just a Little Bit. And with that, I want to remind you that we will have a few more episodes in this series, so don't go nowhere. And we will get back with you guys in the Rye Cooter Experience later.
So kudos to the sound man from McCabe's Guitar Shop.